Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 150 of HER, the podcast all about women, where we share the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and wow, her sex addiction. What's that about? This is going to be a fabulous episode. This is one that you just want to sit there and listen to and take notes. Before we hop into this episode, just know it's made possible by our friends at Smarty Pants Women's Complete Vitamins. They're delicious once-a-day gummies that contain the complete vitamin, mineral, folate, and omega mix customized for women. Trust me, you won't forget to take them because they taste so great. To learn more, go to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And here's a quick reminder to hop on over to iTunes after our episode and rate and review this podcast because, boy, are you going to have some comments. This is just a rich podcast with all kinds of eye-opening information just for you. All right, it's time for HER.
HER, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind.
Her body.
Her life. It's all about HER.
So I was reading the New York Times, and I stumbled upon a really cool article and review about a brand new book called Getting Off. Wow. And I said to myself, what's that about? And what it's about is a young woman's experience with sex addiction. And, you know, having expertise in addiction per se, and working with some of the top experts in sex addiction, I was just immediately fascinated with this and saying to myself, kudos, you know, for coming out and really talking about this kind of experience, which I just know is a lot more common out there than people think. So the author of this wonderful new book that just came out, Getting Off, is Erica Garza. She was born in Los Angeles to Mexican parents. She spent most of her adult life traveling and living abroad, currently lives in L.A. with her husband and daughter, and her essays have appeared everywhere in Salon, in Marie Claire, Good Housekeeping, I could go on. She had earned her MFA, that's a master's in fine arts, in creative nonfiction at Columbia University. And her memoir on sex addiction, Getting Off, is actually her first book. So she's quite the writer. Erica, welcome to the HER podcast.
Thank you.
So, Erica, why did you write the book? What was going on?
You know, I'd always turned to writing as a source of comfort. So writing the book began as a way for me to just understand how I had gotten to the point I'd gotten to with my relationship, with my happiness, just my life, just to sort of trace what had happened and maybe how I might change. And I'd always used writing as a therapeutic tool. But I had written on the topic before and published a few things online as well. And so many people had reached out to me and were so grateful, men and women alike, and were so grateful that somebody was talking about these things because, like me, they had thought that nobody else was going through this and they were all alone. And so I thought in the process, not only would I help myself by using writing as a therapeutic tool, but I would also be able to help a lot of people who felt silenced and ashamed for so long. And I thought that would be a really valid and important contribution to make.
So tell us about your story. Tell us about what happened.
So I should preface this by saying that I grew up in a very normal, happy childhood. I had, you know, a two-parent home. I always felt very loved and cared for. And the reason I say that is because a lot of times when we hear about sex addiction, especially when it comes to a woman talking about it, we assume that there must have been some big trauma. You know, maybe she was molested or raped or something like that along the way. And it's really important for me to make it clear that, you know, this sort of thing can happen to anybody under any circumstances. So yes, happy childhood. And when I was around 12, I started to masturbate and watch porn, just really softcore porn. The internet wasn't really a huge thing back then. So I would go to late night programming when my parents were asleep, just late night Cinemax. And, you know, I watched a lot of it. And I think that in retrospect, that is a pretty normal discovery. I don't think it's out of the ordinary for a kid around 12, 13 to be interested in, you know, explore their body and whatnot. But at the time, because nobody had really talked about sex to me, I was raised in a Catholic household as well as a Latino household, and sex was just something you don't talk about. I assumed that I was doing something that was really wrong and sinful and bad. And so I felt quite ashamed about what I was doing, but I didn't stop. And again, like I said, that's very normal discovery. However, not long after I was diagnosed with scoliosis, and that's when I started to feel quite self-conscious and different from everybody. And that's when I started to use pornography and masturbation as an escape from all of those big, scary feelings.
Wow. And, you know, how did this escalate? So you were young when you were diagnosed with the scoliosis, right?
Yeah, I was 12. And, you know, just I wore a back brace for 2 years. So I just felt very insecure. And I could get a break from, you know, worrying about those sorts of things and the stress that came up, and the emotions, by just masturbating a lot and tuning into porn. And it just sort of got me out of my head a bit. And it was very effective. But as time went on, technology became much more accessible. And so then I discovered online chat rooms. And, you know, I started having cyber sex with people. And then I could download pictures when I found them. And then streaming porn became available. And so I always found that my interest and my need for escape was met by endless visual stimuli and, you know, things that can take me away and escape. I always felt like I had it within easy reach any time of day, whenever I needed it. And just sort of got out of control from then.
Well, now, when you say got out of control, I'm sort of curious about this. So when, you know, how did it affect your studies, your work? How did it actually affect it? Or were you able to kind of somehow navigate that for a while? I mean, I'm just curious how that synced.
Yeah, the biggest negative consequence, I'd say, is just how isolated I became. I found it was much safer and easier to turn to a screen, to spend time alone in my room, you know, chasing after orgasms instead of going out and risking having awkward interactions with people. I started to feel really self-conscious and socially anxious and afraid of intimacy, afraid of social rejection and those sorts of things. And so I found it was much easier to just stay by myself and safe behind a computer screen. And, you know, more masturbation and porn, it all became much more important to me than any other pursuit. So it was the main thing that I had to look forward to, neglecting all of other avenues. It, like, I didn't really care about school that much, although I was a good student. But it always came secondary, you know, relationships and interacting with people and studying and thinking about what I might be when I grew up. All of that stuff came secondary to getting off.
Huh. And, you know, in the book, you talk about your 20s, when you were in your 20s, and a whole series of toxic relationships and hookups, and how your young adulthood became a cycle of fear, shame, self-loathing, and loneliness. So this went on for quite some period of time. This wasn't like you had one summer of this and then you kind of got over it. This was something that was really becoming a piece of who you are.
Yeah, and anytime I would feel like a relationship was getting serious, or I might care about the person, or I felt cared by, I didn't trust it. I didn't know how to deal with true intimacy or love. It all felt too scary and risky. And so I would tend to lean towards relationships that were light and casual and short term. And I felt lonely all the time. Even if I had multiple sex partners, I still felt completely lonely because I didn't know how to allow myself to be vulnerable and to just relax into intimacy. I didn't know how to do that. And so, yeah, it really affected my sense of connection with other people.
Huh. Did it affect your academic studies? I mean, I assume somewhere along the line you got your master's in fine arts at Columbia, which is no small feat here. How did that segue with what was going on in your personal life?
You know, my master's in Columbia, that was all based on writing. And so writing was always a big part of who I was. And I was able to pursue that. You know, I was still watching a lot of porn and, you know, had lots of sexual partners and whatnot, but it never really affected my study so much, especially when it came to creative studies like writing. I always felt like I needed that to be, you know, a creative outlet for me. I needed that as a relief from everything else that was going on.
So Erica, what was the tipping point? What was the time when you finally said, this is out of control? What was going on in your life when you just said, I can't do this anymore. I've got to seek a solution. Take us to that place.
So there isn't one point where, you know, low point. A lot of people ask me what the low point was, and I feel like it was a series of unhappy events and just this realization I came to towards the end of my 20s that I just wanted to know what it felt like to be in a truly loving relationship. And I'd had so many short-term relationships throughout my 20s, and I felt very lonely, and I was sabotaging a lot of relationships. And there was one in particular where I really felt like I could love this person and be loved by him. And it was one of the most healthiest relationships I'd had, but I didn't trust it completely because I didn't feel worthy of love. And so I sabotaged that relationship. And I remember I was 29 and my 30th birthday was coming up. And I thought, okay, I've got to do something differently here. Like this next decade has to be better than the last decade. What do I need to do? How can I change? And I went to Bali for my 30th birthday. And just with this intention to do things differently. And I started to do a lot of yoga and meditate. And I was kind of inspired, I have to admit, by Eat, Pray, Love. It was a big book at the time. And I wanted to go on that kind of journey of self-discovery. And so I started getting in touch with just what was going on in my head and the kinds of things I told myself and why I was so unhappy. And I think I had to be in that sort of space of reflection and self-care in order to meet my husband, who was also in his own journey. He was recovering from drug addiction, and he was kind of on the same path, wanted to do better by himself and to take care of himself. And we were just able to meet each other in that space and hold each other like that. And I was able to reveal to him the first time ever that I thought I was a sex addict. And I remember just this sense of overwhelming relief that came over me. And to my surprise, he didn't run away. And that's what I had expected for a long time. It's like, if I allow myself to get vulnerable, then I'm going to push people away. But then I found that it only brought me closer to him and that it was important to be myself and to reveal these parts about myself. And that's really when my healing began. And I started to go to 12-step meetings and started to write about sex addiction and really started to step into a place of healing.
You know, it's interesting. During your journey, you know, you're looking at the 12 step, you know, as part of that journey. And for everyone out there, the 12 steps, really, a lot of people are probably more familiar with the use of the 12 steps as it relates to alcohol addiction or even drug addiction for that matter. But sex addiction is a big piece of the action as well. But you said that you had disappointing stabs at 12 step. Which is, you know, the 12-step program is controversial at multiple levels. What was it like for you when you tried to adapt to the 12-step program?
At the beginning, I found it was quite triggering. I also was a little put off by the fact that there were more men there. And I had expected that there to be more men at the meetings than women. And that was the case. And I don't think that that happened because women aren't as addicted to sex as men, you know, or that, I don't believe that story that our culture tells. I just think that women don't feel like they can come forward and speak about these things. I think there's still a big layer of shame attached to women and sex addiction. So I did feel a little uncomfortable with that. I also didn't really like the aspect of having to hand my power over to somebody else. And that's a really big part of the 12-step program, is believing in a higher power and believing that you are powerless over this. You know, you have to recite that with the 12 steps. However, I do believe that the 12 step is a beautiful thing and really helpful for a lot of people. And the most important part about it for me was just the sense of community that comes with going to a 12 step meeting. You can go to this place and reveal all of these things about yourself, and there will be other people there who will just accept you no matter what and listen to you and, you know, maybe give you a nod of recognition because they've been there. And I think that that's a really important thing for people who have felt really isolated and alone for a long time.
You mentioned triggering. You know, good Lord, in your lifetime, we now have more triggers when it comes to sex than ever before, especially with digital technology and that whole multimedia type of platform out there. So that's got to change up how you look at the world and back and forth. Do you ever, you know, feel triggered when people talk about Tinder or however people are now hooking up today, and let alone what you can actually see or experience on a device?
Yeah, it's incredibly complex getting to a place of recovery when it comes to something like sex addiction, because you don't want to cut off sex completely either. You know, that's not part of a healthy process. That can become its whole other disorder. And having instant access to sex, through technology, and that makes it quite difficult. So I do get triggered from time to time, but I know how to deal with those triggers in a healthier way than I did in the past. I don't feel like I'm going to give into them and start binging all over again, because I've learned in the process of recovery how to feel those feelings when they come up, how to use other methods in order to step out of, you know, the trigger response and giving into those triggers. So I feel like it takes a lot of work, but it is possible to get there even with all of the access and all of the technology that exists. If you get to a place of healing and you work on yourself, then you can get to that place of balance.
Did you ever try one of the in-resident sex addiction recovery centers?
No, I didn't.
I'm curious why not.
And I'm not even really sure what goes on at those. I'm curious what goes on at those rehab facilities, but I don't have much experience with that.
Fascinating. You know, because you read about how men go to those. As soon as, especially high-profile guys who, you know, like Tiger Woods, you know, who are found out to have a serious issue, and then off to the rehab center they go. But when was the last time you ever heard about a woman going?
Yeah. Well, you don't really hear
of having read about anything like that, unless I missed it. I obviously don't read all the news, but it seems to me more of a kind of a guy thing. It's, you know, they go and they get, you know, turned around and put on the right path or back and forth. But, you know, I just find that fascinating, especially in the Harvey Weinstein world, where, you know, clearly people are being called sex addicts, and we're not really quite sure what that really means, especially with regard to guys, where there's more of a predatory, you know, aspect to this and back and forth. What you're describing is you know, an obsession that interfered with your life and your ability to be able to have to experience a meaningful, loving relationship that obviously interfered with your life when you had more social withdrawal and less interactions, et cetera. There's that loneliness and all the rest of it. So if you were to tell someone out there, because we have so many women in her podcast land who probably scratch their heads going, I wonder if I have the issue. I wonder if I have this issue. And, you know, what are the easiest steps or the most accessible steps, because nothing's easy, to take to begin to heal from something like this? What would you recommend to someone who approached you with that?
I would recommend going to a Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous website, you know, where they have a lot of tests that you can take online, where, you know, with check boxes to see if maybe you are expressing some of those negative and destructive patterns that are quite common among sex and love addicts. But of course, it's going to manifest differently in every person. And I don't think that, you know, in order to be in recovery, you have to stop being an experimental sexual person or stop having casual sex or even stop watching porn. I'm not really against those things. The way it manifested for me is that I used those things to escape from dealing with my emotions, and I used it to get in the way of my intimacy with other people. And I think that it's up to the person who is wondering about this to take a hard look at how they're using sex or how they're using porn. Are they using it to escape? Are they using it to interfere with their relationships. You have to come to those sort of conclusions yourself. But those tests that you can take through the Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous website, I think they can be really valuable. And then, maybe go to a 12-step meeting or talk to a therapist or start even write. If you don't feel like you can come to this to anybody, a therapist or a 12-step meeting, then just start writing it down. Start to take a look at your decisions and ask yourself if you're happy, if you feel stuck. I think that those are all really good first steps.
Interesting. When you look at, the question of, do you really have an issue, right? If you look at addiction per se, there are two questions that I kind of distilled down that really relate to all addiction and that you can always ask yourself. So if there's an option to do something in front of you, take drugs, drink alcohol, eat, a mound of, granulated sugar, to look at online porn for hours on end, to engage in obsessive sexual relationships and hookups and that type of thing. So these are all the options, right? So the two questions are, one, if you do this particular activity, will you feel a sense of loss of control? The second question is, if you do this activity, will you feel, after doing the activity, shame, blame, and guilt? If the answer is yes, which it usually is to both questions, there's a very good chance you have an addictive issue. And then that's when you really want to, get some help out there. Now, there are certified sex addiction therapists. They're called CSATs. Did you ever have any interaction with anyone who was a therapist in the community with that level of certification?
Not with that certification, no.
Interesting. So what kind of therapist did you deal with?
I went to an MFT, and then I did something called the Hoffman process. I don't know if you've heard of that, but that's the 7-day retreat.
Explain that.
I'm sorry?
Explain that for all of our Herb podcast people.
So yeah, they say that you condense a lifetime of psychotherapy into 1 week, and you go, and it's basically about tracing your patterns, your negative patterns, and where you learned them in childhood. And there's a lot of writing exercises, and it's something that's shrouded in a lot of mystery. You're not supposed to talk about what happens at the Hoffman process afterward, but it was really a great way of getting in touch with your negative patterns and facing them and understanding where you learned them and how you might find a way out of them. And so that was one of the things I did. And then I did a lot of yoga and meditation. I used writing as a therapeutic tool. I never went to a sex therapist, but I did a lot of talk therapy. That was a really important part of the process. And then, of course, as I mentioned, the 12-step meetings were part of that journey. It was really important for me to try a lot of different things to see what worked for me. And then I found in the end that a combination of different methods was the most effective approach.
Which is exactly why I asked the questions, because what you just said is so correct. As a physician, I always ask people to kind of cherry pick, do a trial and error, then cherry pick and put and weave together a plan that will work best for you. Just weave it together. And then continuously realize that you're a dynamic, living, breathing, organism, and things may change over time. So you have to continuously adapt and adjust, but, kind of tweak and refine, the system as you go forward. But I really like the way you kind of cobbled it together and made it work for yourself, and that you weren't afraid to do that. And if something didn't work, that's cool. Then you just move on to the next thing. But it was a learning experience, and you got something out of that. And that was great, too. I just want to make sure everyone out there knows that we are talking to Erica Garza, and her website is ericagarza.com. And the name of her book is Getting Off. And then there's a colon, One Woman's Journey Through Sex and Porn Addiction. And, clearly Erica's not speaking for, a cast of thousands here. She's speaking for herself. And this was her journey, But I think that, you know, given the fact that she's such a great writer, which is wonderful, and at the same time, she's so articulate about, you know, what happened with her over the course of years, is really important, because this gives you a valuable resource to be able to go to and learn yourself. If you have questions, if you have concerns, if you're really trying to seek some help, I think that this is a great way to be able to begin that journey if you have no other resource out there. And I really must thank you, you know, on behalf of the HER audience, Erica, for your courage and your candor in sharing your experience and this piece of your life journey with everyone, because I think that this is a valuable book with authentic and raw information that will resonate with so many people out there who may have some level of this issue of sex addiction and problems with online pornography. So I thank you so much, Erica, for gifting us with the book, and also for being on the HER podcast to share your wisdom.
Thank you for having me, Dr. Pam.
Awesome. And everyone out there, I want to make certain that you can catch every episode of HER by hitting subscribe on iTunes or on our show page at RadioMD.com. Right now, you've just heard this wonderful podcast with Erica Garza, who is the author of Getting Off, talking all about sex addiction and her journey with porn addiction as well, and what the healing process and recovery process was like for her. So you've just heard this now. Rate and review it on iTunes right now, because I'm waiting to hear from you. Your feedback is just golden. I'm Dr. Pam Peek. So follow me on Facebook, Dr. Pam Peek, or on Twitter at Pam Peek MD. And you can also check out our HER show page at RadioMD.com for all of our past episodes. Thanks for listening, and stay well.